Welcome to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly. This podcast is presented in the context of our Sunday morning service. We hope you enjoy this presentation.
Verse 20, Proverbs 21, verse 20. And we are on our third week of our series called Margin. And we're so glad that you've joined us today. As we dive in, we're going to talk about the topic of financial margin. Financial margin. Now, for those of you, this is your first time to Casper Faith, or maybe it's your first time to church in a long time, we want you to know we're really glad you're here. It's good to have you, and hopefully you're not overcome by the paint fumes. We tried to get them aired out, but we're glad you're here. But you might be thinking, when you heard me say our topic today is financial margin, you might have been thinking, oh, great, the preacher's going to hit me up for money today. Now, that's the common thing. That's what people a lot of times think about church. There's two things churches do. They tell me how horrible I am, and they want my money. Okay? I want you to hear me closely. I don't want your money. Okay? That was a good place for applause, but anyway. I don't want your money. God wants your money. We're going to talk a little bit about giving, but friends, the majority of this message today is going to talk about practical tips for you and I to establish financial margin in our lives. As we talk about this today, I just want to ask a question. How many of you would be honest before God and everyone here in this building and say that I frequently, or maybe even occasionally or frequently, have times where I'm stressed out about finances? How many would be honest about that? Raise your hand. Okay, look around you. Keep your hands up. Look around you. This is not an uncommon problem. This is a very typical issue in our culture today. Financial stress in our society is completely normal. You see it in almost everyone you come in contact with. You see it, people today, living paycheck to paycheck is normal. Having monthly payments, that's normal. Being in debt is normal. Worry, anxiety, fear, especially in this slowed economy, that's normal. Having tension in your relationship because of finances. Why'd you buy that? Well, why'd you buy that? Sadly, that is normal. Having little or no financial margin if a crisis or emergency comes up, that is normal. And friends, that's why we hate normal, because normal is not working. If you're taking notes this morning, I want to give you a working definition of margin. If you would take out the insert from your bulletin today, and we've been talking about margin. For those of you, this is your first time with us in this series. This is what margin is. Margin is the amount available beyond what is necessary. It is the amount available beyond what is necessary. In other words, it's the difference between what you have and what you need. So financially, we could say that if you earn $3,000 a month, and you only spend $2,500, then you would have $500 of margin. You got that? Now, if you make $3,000 a month and you spend $3,000, you have zero, nada, zip, zilch margin. Some of you are saying, well, hey, that's nothing. I make $3,000 a month and I spend $3,500. Friends, that's a whole nother issue, okay? You need help. Hopefully this message will get you on track of that. But margin is the amount that is available above what is necessary, above what you and I need. What does it look like in our everyday life, financial margin? It looks like this. It's having money left over at the end of the month. That's possible. Did you know that? And that's a good thing. You can have money left over at the end of the month. It's having money available to help someone in need. It's having money available to give without feeling stressed about giving. It could be having money available to do something you enjoy. Or maybe it's having money, a financial margin, that you could pay someone to do something for you so you have more margin of time. For maybe you have enough money, you could hire someone to clean your house. Your financial margin creates time margin. Or maybe you have the opportunity to pay someone to mow your lawn. You wouldn't do it now, but a few months from now, you know, about 6 months from now. Or hire someone to do your snow. Your financial margin could create some time margin, freeing you up to do other things. Margin is the ability to be financially at rest, to not have anxiety, to not have stress, to not be afraid about your finances. That's what financial margin looks like. Unfortunately, financial margin is something that many people, most people in our society today, don't have. And what we want to do in the next few minutes we have is we want to help you create financial margin in your life so that you can have peace and rest and joy when you think of your finances. So let's take a look at Proverbs chapter 21, verse 20. This is a great verse to commit to memory. I'm going to be reading from a couple different versions. First, the New American Standard, and this is what it says. There is precious treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man swallows it up. Now, that word treasure there, it means a place that stores things. It's like a treasury or a depository, a storehouse, some place where you'd go and you'd put something there and you'd just keep it there and then you'd walk away and you could come back and access it whenever you want it. The NIV communicates that when you read this verse in the New International Version, it says, "In the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil." There are stores of it. There's not just enough for this moment, but there's enough for later on. In other words, there is margin in the house of the wise. There is more available than what you need at the moment. But the foolish person, what does a foolish person do? They gobble it up. They swallow it. They devour it all. So there is nothing left for later. Notice that the Bible does not say there is financial margin in the house of the wealthy. Did you realize that? It's not in the house of the wealthy, it's in the house of the wise. It doesn't say that there is stores in the home of the six-figure income. It doesn't say that there is, you know, margin and all these things for the two-income family. It says, no, in the house of the wise, there is margin. There is a wise way to manage our money, and there is a foolish way to manage our money. So the question is, how do we manage our money wisely? How do we create margin? Well, if you're taking notes this morning, point number one, this is the first way to create margin: adopt a buy now, pay now mentality. Adopt a buy now, pay now mentality. Now, there's three subpoints under this, letter A, B, and C. Letter A is this: don't go in debt. That's a biggie. Don't go in debt. So many people live with a buy now, pay later mentality. Instead of saying, I'm going to pay for it now, I'm going to buy this car and make payments. I'm going to buy these clothes with my credit card and then pay them off later. I am going to go on vacation, but I'm going to take out a loan to do it. And so we buy now, but we pay for it later. And friends, when you do that, two things happen. You always pay more. You realize that? Because you have to pay with interest. I tell my kids all the time, kind of in the area of life, you can buy, you can play now and pay later, or you can pay now and play later. If you pay right up front, doing what you need, then you can play and enjoy it. But if you play now and you run out of time for whatever it is, then you pay in a bad way. Everyone pays. And so many times we want to play now and pay later. And friends, pay it and then play it. That's what we need to do. We should only pay it and then play with it. Buy now, pay now. There are so many people that are living beyond their means. And the reason for that is because they have bought into our culture's definition of happiness. It's there for you in your notes. Our culture's definition of happiness is this: more than I currently have. That's what society says. Happiness is having more than what I have right now. It's having a newer car. It's having a better fishing rod. It's having more clothes. More, more, more. That's what society says will make you happy. I see this in children. I see it in teens. I see it in adults, in seniors, everywhere across the board. What's really prevalent is seeing the 20-somethings that are getting married, and they want everything that their parents have. They want the same size house and the same kind of cars and the same new furniture and the new stereo systems and all of the things their parents have that have taken their parents 30 years to accumulate. And they want them in 30 days. So they buy now, but they put it on a loan or on credit card, and they're paying later. I heard a statistic a while back that the average American's credit card debt was like $12,000. $12,000. If you buy now and you're paying later, you are killing financial margin in your life. And friends, it won't make you happy. It doesn't make you happy. You know, they say that people that win the lottery and get these millions, in about 2 years' time, five tops, most of them are bankrupt. Do you know why? Because I want more than I have. That's their definition of happiness. So even though they won the lottery and have $90 million, it's not enough. Here's the thing about financial margin. It is not an income issue. It is a lifestyle issue. If we're struggling with financial margin, most of the time, it is a lifestyle issue for us instead of an income issue. The Apostle Paul talks about this when he wrote to a young man named Timothy. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, starting in verse 6, he says, "Now godliness with contentment is great gain." What did Paul say? Look at that. Contentment is great gain, not a small gain. But if you're content with what you have and you don't need more, it's great gain. It's the big W. The big win. You want to win big at life? Be content with what you have. It is great gain to be satisfied and not want to have more. Paul goes on, "We brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. There is nothing you buy on credit or a loan or with cash that you can take with you to heaven. Nothing. You can't buy anything and take it to heaven with you." And Paul says, "Having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich," those who want more than they currently have, who have bought into society's definition of happiness, "those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare." It's a trap. This mentality of, if I just have a little bit more, then I'll be happy. It's a trap. And he goes on to say, "They fall into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and have pierced themselves through with many sorrows." What are some of the sorrows we see today by people who've neglected financial margin? We see debt causing tremendous sorrow. We see financial pressure they're under causing tremendous sorrow. We see the stress causing sorrow, financial tension over money causing sorrow. People that have some great blessings from God, not able to enjoy them because they don't have margin in their life. Marginless living, friends, is foolishness. And last week we talked about live wisely. Look at your life. Be careful how you live, as wise, not as unwise. To have a marginless life when it comes to money and finance is foolish. You see, many of us have lifestyled ourselves past margin. Our lifestyle does not permit us to live with any financial margin in our lives. Whatever you have, it won't be enough if you're looking for contentment from financial gain. If you just have a little bit more, culture says, put it on payments. Buy now, pay later. But if you do, you won't have margin, and it will hurt. In fact, you know what it does? It brings you into slavery. You don't believe me? Look what Solomon, one of the wisest men in the world, look what he said in Proverbs 22, verse 7, the second part of verse 7, the borrower is servant to the lender. The borrower is a slave to the lender. How many of you want to be a slave? I don't see any takers. I want to be free. I don't want to be a slave. I don't want to be in bondage. I don't want to be under oppression. But when we get in debt, we become slaves. Now you say, Craig, is there any time where going in debt is wise? Not really, but I'm going to give you two possible times when it might be okay. Okay? One is getting a mortgage on a house. Okay? And sometimes you can get a mortgage on a house cheaper than you can get rent. But you have to make sure that you're making enough money, enough income, that you can cover the principal, the interest, the taxes, the insurance, and the utilities and upkeep. Because I know some people, man, we're going to buy a bigger house. We want a bigger house. But, oh, man, I didn't realize now we're heating more, and I've just doubled my energy bill. And I can't afford to maintain it. You need to make sure that when you're buying a house that you are spending wisely. They say when you do a mortgage, it should not exceed 35% of your income. Okay? The mortgage should not exceed that. There's a second time when it might be wise, and that is to get an education. But be careful about taking out a lot of student loans, because here's what happens. College runs between $18,000 and $30,000 a year, depending on where you go, state or private schools. At the end of 4 years, that's $72,000 to $120,000 that you are in debt, and now you're going to get a job at the lowest level, and you have to pay off that debt. Be very careful. Young people, start getting good grades. When your parents say get good grades, there is a reason for that. Get the scholarships. Sign up for things, okay? Start working now and saving so that you can make a dent in some of that debt if you're going to take out loans. Be very careful how you live, as wise, not as unwise. For some of you, your debt means you need to discard your credit cards. Some of you need plastic surgery. You need to take a scissors to your plastic, and you need to cut those babies up and throw them away. Turn to your neighbor and say, do you need plastic surgery? Now, are all credit cards bad? I don't think they necessarily are. I have a credit card. The reason I do is I don't carry a lot of cash, but here's the thing. I only use my card when I know I've got money to pay for it. In fact, a lot of times it's like we live on a budget. I'm going to talk about that in a moment. And it's like, okay, this is in the budget, so I pay for it, and then I pay it off every month. Don't put anything on a card if you can't pay for it on the next statement, okay? Don't do it. That is a trap, and it's a downward spiral. It's a horrible thing to do. And so some of you, you may need to quit your credit cards. Some of you may maybe been thinking about taking out a loan. Don't take out a loan. Because when you go in debt, you become a slave to the debt. If you want to live above and beyond in financial margin, that is the first key. Now, if you're in debt, you say, Craig, I'm in debt. So what do I do? You say, don't get in debt. I'm already there. Here's a strategy, okay? It's not in your notes, but maybe you want to write this down. Try to get the lowest interest rates possible. Shop around and see if you can take those loans, put them somewhere else, and see if you can get a lower interest rate, and make sure that by the time you pay the fees, that it is a good deal for you, okay? Next, make minimum payments on all your debts, but maybe on the smallest one, or the one that has the highest interest, you kind of have to wait out there. Try to put as much extra money to that as you can. Just funnel all your extra money and pay off that little debt. Maybe it's $500 on a credit card. Pay that $500 off. After that, then take the money you are paying to that one and roll it into your next debt. And pay as much money off as you can. And then it's just snowballing it. When that debt is paid off, take all of that money and move it to the next one and to the next one and to the next one. You might say, how many debts do you have? Well, how many credit cards do you have? How many loans have you taken out? Pay off your debt. Make that your number one priority. You got that extra money? Why go to Starbucks? Make the cup of coffee yourself. Put the money towards your debt. Maybe give up eating out once or twice a week, depending on how much you go out, and put it towards your debt. Get out of debt. That is the biggest key to adopting a buy now, pay now mentality. And then here's the thing. Once you're out of debt, all that money that you are putting to that payment, now put it in savings. And that brings us to letter B. If you're taking notes this morning, letter B, save by not spending all of your income. Okay? Save by not spending all of your income. Solomon, the writer of Proverbs chapter 6, took an illustration from nature when he was teaching his kids about finances. This is what he said. He says, go to the ant, you sluggard. Sluggard is a name for a lazy person. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. Friends, ants store up for a later time. They don't just live for the moment. They save in times of plenty, knowing that winter is coming. There'll be a time of shortage, a time of lack, and if I haven't saved, then I'm in deep weeds. Save your money by not spending all of it. That is how you adopt a buy now, pay now mentality. Because how can you pay for your furnace that goes out or a new transmission on your car? How can you pay for it now if you haven't been saving for it in times of plenty? Sometimes it's like, man, I've got this extra $100, $200. I'm going to go and spend it. Because I've been looking at that new sweater, that new dress, you know, that new stereo component. And save your money by not spending it all. How much should we save? I don't know. Dave Ramsey says, have at least $1,000 like in an emergency savings account that you don't touch. It's there for emergencies. I like having $2,000 in mine. Some financial counselors say you need to save 3 to 6 months worth of your income and just have it there. If you lost your job, how would you pay for your house and utilities and stuff? You want a cushion so you can get back on your feet. So if you make $3,000 a month, then that means you need like $9,000 to $18,000 set aside in savings. You say, Craig, that's ridiculous. I can barely get $18 in my savings. Here's the thing. When you have money left over at the end of the month, put it in the savings account. Do it small. Small steps will get you a long ways. I ran a marathon 11 years ago. I know it doesn't look like it now, okay? But I ran a marathon. I did not go out and run the 26 miles. It took me a year to prepare. It took me a year. When I first started running, 6 blocks was all I could go, okay? But I went from 6 blocks to 26.2 miles in the course of a year, because small steps, a little bit out of a time, will get you to your goal. Start small and you will get there. So save by not spending all of your money. And then the next point under this of about adopt a buy now, pay now mentality is do not go in debt for others. That's letter C in your notes. Don't go into debt for others. Don't be a guarantor on their loans. It says in Proverbs 22, 26, do not be one of those who shakes hands in a pledge, one who is surety for debts. Friends, it's bad enough to go into debt for your poor decisions, let alone to do it for someone else's, okay? In fact, when Proverbs was talking to his kids in Proverbs chapter 6 about finances, he said, don't. If you find yourself being a guarantor on someone's loan, beg, plead, cry, get on your knees. Please let me out of this commitment. Solomon said, don't do it. Don't go in debt yourself. Don't do it for others. Okay, let's move on. The second thing, if we're going to have financial freedom, financial margin in our lives, is number 2, live by a budget. Live by a budget. You know what a budget is for most of us? We spend everything we have, and then we just try to budge it forward and try to eke more out. No, that's not what a budget is. A budget is when you sit down and you calculate your expenses, you look at your income, and then you allot your income to pay off your expenses. We're told in Luke chapter 14, Jesus was talking here, and while he was talking spiritually, there's a great principle about finance. It says, for which of you intending to build a tower does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Jesus is saying, if you're going to build a new building, don't you want to make sure you've got enough money to complete the project? And yet I know some people, they build a lifestyle and they take on all these responsibilities, but then they realize, I can't pay for it. A budget helps us pay for our lifestyle. So build a budget. And in your notes, I've listed a website that you can go and download a document. It is a monthly income and expenses. You can see it on the screen. This is a form my wife and I have used the past 25 years in our marriage. Every year, I kind of keep track of the expenses in these categories, and I see, are we up? Are we down? Do we need to increase some budget areas? Do we need to lower some budget areas? And if we get a raise, it's not like, oh, good, let's go spend it. Let's try to put some in more in savings, or is there an area that we need to increase? If one area is doing well, can we take it from there and put it someplace else? And I tell you, having a budget is so freeing. It's so freeing. I don't know what I'd do if we wouldn't have a budget. I know we would not have all the beautiful things that God has blessed us with. Now, I will say this. There have been some times as I'm sitting down doing my budget, it causes stress. Because I'm going, oh God, I don't know how we're going to do that. God, you see this area? You see this is taking more money? All my cars are approaching 200,000 miles and we're spending thousands on car repairs. God, I don't know how we're going to make it. And so I look for areas to take from. And here's the thing, in 25 years, God has been faithful. And there's been sometimes on paper it's looked like, I don't know how we're going to do it, but I'm doing the best I can, and so I'm not wasting money. And as I have been faithful, God has been faithful to me. I don't have credit card debt. I haven't had to take out loans. I have a home loan. That's it. I've paid cash for my vehicles because I've tried to save money some every year so that when the time comes and I need a new vehicle, and I'm looking right now and I'm praying, Jesus, give me a good deal. And how many know he can give you a good deal? Our sofa was falling apart. We got a new sectional sofa. We were looking at the store. They were $17,000 to $2,000 to $3,000. My wife got one for $100 at a rummage sale. And it's a nice one. And it's like, oh yeah, I can handle that. See, here's the thing. Sometimes on your budget, you can't go get the nicest and the newest. For many years, my wife and I, we bought our clothes at rummage sales and secondhand stores. or we get them on clearance. You know, God can provide if you'll be frugal, if you will look and if you'll pray and say, God, help me live by a budget. Live by a budget will give you financial margin. And then the last area that I want to talk about to achieve financial margin, and this may be the most important point of all, is put God first in your finances. Put God first in your finances. We have to put God first because you know what usually happens? We tend to put ourselves first. And when we put ourselves first, we just shove God to the background. And we don't think about God, what do you want me to do with my finances? Unless we get everything taken care of and we have a little bit of money left and it's like, oh, maybe I should get God involved this late in the game and say, okay, what do you want me to do now? Don't leave God to the end. Involve God in your finances first. Jesus said, don't worry how you're going to make it financially. One of his followers, Matthew, recorded Jesus talking about people concerned about how they're going to live, how they're going to make it. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 31, Jesus said, don't worry, saying, what shall we eat? What shall we drink? What shall we wear? For after all these things the Gentiles seek. For your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things, but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. When you put God in your first place in your life, including your finances, he takes care of everything else. So how do we do that? Letter A in your notes. The first way to put God first is to tithe. Tithe on your income. The word tithe means tenth. It means a tenth. It's taking 10% of your income and giving it to God. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because this fall when we did our stewardship series, the ABCs of stewardship, we really focused on that. You can go online to casperfaith.com, go to our media page, and you can listen to all those messages as we talked about that. But I would be wrong if I did not touch on the tithe in talking about putting God first in your finances. In Malachi chapter 3, verse 8, this is what the prophet Malachi wrote. He said, will a man rob God, yet you've robbed me? But you say, in what way have we robbed you, Lord? In tithes and offerings. And so the tithe is giving a tenth of your money before your bills, before your taxes. It's a tenth of all your income and giving it to God. And he goes on to say, you are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want God to curse me. How many want to be under God's curse? I don't see any hands up. How many want to be under God's blessing? Okay, if you want God's blessing, listen to what the prophet says. Bring all the tithes into the storehouse, that's the church, that there may be food in my house. And try me now in this. You know, when God writes this, it's almost like he's telling them, or he's thinking, you know what? I can just see what's going to happen. When I tell them, give me 10% of your income, they're going to say, Lord, what happened to you? I mean, you've got to be crazy. This is stupid. 10% of my income to you, give to you? What did you do? Move to Colorado and start smoking weed? I mean, come on. And God's saying, you know what? Test me. Try it. Come on, just try it. I dare you. And that's why I think he put it in there, because he knew he'd say, this is ridiculous. And he says, test me. Put me to the test to see if I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you such a blessing that there will not be room enough to receive it. Friends, when you bring the tithe, God blesses the rest, okay? Tithing pays off. Now, here's the thing. You can't tithe and then disregard the other financial principles of living, not living by a budget and putting everything on credit cards and ballooning up your debt. It won't work. You need to follow all of God's financial principles. Tithing is one of the most important ones to put first. Because here, Tithing breaks the power of materialism that we struggle with so much. And you know what? I love paying my tithe because I know God, and here's the thing, I know I am blessed, and it's not always financially. I'm not saying if you tithe, you're going to have health, wealth, and prosperity. In fact, you know what? You might have some financial difficulties. You know why? Because the devil wants to know, are you serious about putting God first in your life? If he can throw up your car breaking down, your furnace breaking down, you have financial difficulty, you say, you know what? This tithing stuff, forget it. I'm not going to do it anymore. He's going, good. They're back in my hip pocket now. They're not trusting God. They're not putting him first anymore. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. We talked about that in our small groups this last week. Lean not on your own understanding. Tithing is the first way to put God first. The second way, and we're going to wrap up with this, is genuinely ask God, how would you have me manage my resources? Genuinely ask God, Lord, how do you want me to manage? And this isn't just our income, but it's our possessions. It's our time. It's everything. Here's the thing. God may ask you to give away a car to someone or a watch or a coat. God may say, hey, I want you to buy groceries for someone. I want you to give $100 to this single mom. Or maybe there's someone in the store here. I want you to get this for them. Let the Holy Spirit speak to you and prompt you about how to be a blessing to other people. Because here's the thing. We can be rivers or reservoirs. A reservoir says, man, God blesses me, and oh yes, pour it on me, Jesus, and I'm just going to hold and contain it. I'm going to keep it all to myself. Do you know why the Dead Sea is dead? Because all it does is receive. It has no outlet. And as it receives and receives and receives, it produces stagnancy and death. But friends, if we are a river, if we say, God, all the blessings, financial possessions, time, talent, everything, if all those are yours and you give it to me and you say, give it away, it's not mine to hold and hoard, I'm going to pass it through. You know what God says? Hey, I can trust Craig with money because he just gave $100 to someone. He gave $1,000. He gave a car away when I told him to give a car away. And so I know I can give him stuff because he will be obedient to me with it. Now, to date, God hasn't told me to give away a car. And I many times say, God, don't tell me to do that. And then I have to repent. You see, I need to be broken of my desire to hang on to stuff and say, God, I got to live open-hearted and put you first in every area of my life. When we follow these principles, God blesses us. Proverbs 8:17 says, and this is speaking about wisdom, which is really God himself, and this is what Scripture says, I love those who love me, and those who seek me find me. With me are riches and honor, enduring wealth and prosperity. My fruit is better than fine gold, and what I yield surpasses choice silver. God says, when you honor me, I will give you things that are better than gold and silver and money. Friends, you don't know the joy until you start putting God first in your finances. I am not the richest person. I don't have the newest things. But friends, God has blessed me with a great family. He's blessed me with peace. I don't have stress about how am I going to make ends meet next month. Man, financial margin is great. It's Toyota! If you don't have it, what does God want you to do to achieve it?
You have been listening to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly in Casper, Wyoming. For more information, please email us casperfaith@gmail.com or call us at 307-265-9121. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of Casper Faith Assembly, where relationships matter most.